Hey guys, this is Guy Agostini, aka Sunspot himself, and if I can't be hanging out with Jubilee, I'm happy to be hanging out with the Power of X-Men Familia. Hope you survive the experience.
Boom! What's up, Familia? Dayspring here with a very gut-wrenching episode of Power of X-Men. And Familia, listen, this is a spoiler review for episode 5, entitled Remember It. It's the newest episode of X-Men 97. It just came out today, April 10th, episode 5. So it is a lot that happens in this episode. If you do not want to hear this, because again, I know that some of these episodes on Power of X-Men just autoplay for people who subscribe to the podcast, I am sorry. I have no control over that. However, this is going to be spoiler heavy, and I'm going to give you a countdown on spoilers for episode 5, entitled Remember It. And the countdown begins right now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh my god, Familia. Oh my white phoenix. I cannot believe what happened in today's episode. It was a lot. There was so much in this episode. And I have to say, for so much happening in this episode, for so much happening in the series, I know that is like the larger criticism of the series, is that a lot happens very quickly. I thought this episode was so well paced. I mean, bravo to Bo DeMaio for the writing, because he laid so much groundwork in the first 4 episodes, and they kind of come into fruition right now. That scene with adult Cable coming up to Maddie and saying, kill the music. And Maddie looks at him and says, oh my god, your eyes, you're him. And Cable just looks at her and says, I'm sorry, Mom. And time slides away. And the way Jennifer Hale delivered the line, sorry for what? I don't think she was oblivious. Well, I mean, yeah, she did not know that the Sentinels were coming to kill her. She didn't know that. But I don't think she was saying sorry for what, as if, you know, he was apologizing just for the scenario. I think the way Jennifer Hale delivered that line was her saying, sorry for what? You're my son. You never need to apologize to me, no matter what happens. That is the subtext I got in Jennifer Hale's performance. Oh my god, Familia. The Genosha massacre occurred. E is for extinction right here. No Cassandra Nova. I don't think it's Cassandra Nova anymore, because Cable comes up to Maddie and says he is coming. He, not she. So unless they're going to adapt Cassandra Nova to be tied to Xavier in a more literal sense, that Xavier is just like Cassandra Nova is just dark Xavier in this, unless they're doing something like that, which I doubt they are. I think it's pretty safe to assume that it's like either Gyrick, Trask, Bastion, all of that we've sort of assumed already in the back end. But I think with this, Cassandra Nova, in the way that we know her, I think is out. Even though this is a direct adaptation of E is for Extinction. Direct adaptation of E is for Extinction. So, you know, Magneto dies in this. And Gambit dies. And in fact, the title, Remember It, is taken from Gambit's line in the season 2 finale reunion, part 2, I believe, where he goes to the Nasty Boys and he says, the name is Gambit, remember it. So remember it right here. And by the way, remember it, this means in so many ways than just one. It's not only a homage to Gambit and his death here, but it is also remember it. Remember Genosha. Remember those who died. Oh! The layers with this. I mean, this series is so sophisticated, Familia. We can have our criticisms on things. We can have our criticisms about Storm's Mohawk, whether we like it or not. We can have a criticism about pacing. We can love it. We can dislike it. But I have to tell you, you cannot deny the level of thought that has been placed into the series. There is so much thought. And you can argue that there's too much happening at once. That's fine, whatever. I mean, listen, nothing's perfect out there. But the writing is very sophisticated. Bo DeMaio truly cares about these characters, truly cares about these stories. It is so clear that he understood what made these stories special. The voice acting is top-notch. I mean, the ending with Lenore Zann, when she said, I can't feel you. And the entire thing for her has been not being able to touch Gambit, but she can touch Magneto. And Gambit tells her there's some things that are deeper than skin. And Rogue realizing that at the dance with Magneto. And by the way, Magneto is, they're touching, they're having a very sensual dance. And she realizes what she has with Remy is very special and that she can finally touch him. She can finally touch Gambit, but he's dead. It is Shakespearean. It is a tragedy on a personal level for the character. I mean, Familia, I'm worked up thinking about this episode. I really am, because I think it's beautiful. I think it was beautifully done. And I know a lot of people were going to be angry because some of their favorite characters died. We do see a lot of death here for Banshee, Marrow, I'm assuming Dazzler, Callisto. Oh my God, Callisto, Maddie. But this is how you do these kinds of stories. It's powerful. Very powerful. Oh my goodness. It's a really intense episode. And I just want to say that I walked away from this really upset inside. And so I got home from Madonna last night at like 1:45, 2 in the morning. I was like, oh, I'm going to stay up one more hour and I'm going to watch this episode and I'm going to do my live recording. But I passed out. And so I woke up, I got my bagel, and I watched this episode. And, you know, we had talked to Bo the Mile on the back end. He said, hey, make sure you tell everyone in the Power of X-Men Familia that they need to rewatch episode one because a lot of the seeds I planted are going to come into fruition. So Jean's vision that she had, or Maddie, I'm sorry, it's Maddie. You know, it's so weird because she thought she was Jean in the moment, but it was Maddie. But Maddie's vision that she had when she went into Garrick's mind was the Genosian genocide. And the little, and now we know that that little whirlwind shape of a man saying, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. That was Cable. That was Cable who she saw in her vision. Adult Cable telling her he's sorry. She had a vision of her own death. Oh my God. I mean, like, and a huge massacre of all of the mutants on Genosha. Oh my gosh, Familia. Oh my gosh. Next level. Next level. So let's dive into this episode. Let's, you know, this is probably going to be a little bit more of a detailed breakdown than just a first impressions episode, but how can it not be, right? I mean, this episode is huge. Now, one of the things that I think is really clever about this episode is that if the first couple of episodes relied heavily on nostalgia, which Bo has talked to us about, that there was a lot of reliance on nostalgia and respecting the past, this is trying to forge ahead its own thing. X-Men 97 is now turning into its own thing, right? They're going to start tackling plots and stories that are less of a homage, but more of a new direction. And I think that's quite clever. This is the episode where the series finally gets its footing. It understands itself. Episode 5, I believe we're getting, what, like 10 episodes this season? So midway through, I am telling you, this was designed as a mid-season cliffhanger, of course. But this is the episode that X-Men 97 finds its voice as its own series. But no longer respecting the past, which it has respected the past so well. Respected the past very, very well. Now, we are looking towards the future and having it doing its own thing. So let's look at the intro. The intro was pretty standard from what I saw. The only new scene I saw was Apocalypse and Cable. That was from Beyond Good and Evil Part 1, I believe. But all the other things we had seen before, Storm fighting Callisto. Oh, no. Well, we have Gambit and Nightcrawler. That was very cute, seeing Gambit and Nightcrawler fight together. I like that quite a bit. So Gambit and Nightcrawler fighting together, as well as Cable and Apocalypse. So we start off with Trish Philby, who we all know in the comics is a reporter and a love interest for one Hank McCoy. Was so happy to see her, and she's doing a feature on the X-Men to try to humanize them because Genosha is joining now the UN, and Rogue and Gambit and Magneto are on the way there to see Genosha. And Genosha is actually this really incredible mutant paradise, and we see characters like Glob and Pixie and Leech and Dazzler and Nightcrawler, and they're all there. And joining the Council of Genosha is Madeline Pryor. And within the council, we have Banshee, we have Moira. No indication that she's a mutant. I mean, she's outwardly called a human in this episode by Emma Frost. We've got Emma Frost, Sebastian Shaw, Val Cooper is there, and they want Magneto to lead Genosha. But if he's going to be the leader of Genosha, he wants her words, not mine, Rogue's words, a queen, which doesn't always settle, you know, nicely with Rogue. But that is sort of like the general gist of them coming to Genosha. Now, we knew that Maddie wanted to forge her own path. We saw this at the end of episode 3. She said, I'm going to find my own future. And I have to tell you, it was very beautiful that she would be coming to Genosha, that she would be trying to do something different. She acknowledges she's not Jean. She wants to move forward with her life. So again, within the idea and scope of this being a tragedy, she has a really great setup here in Genosha. And right before she dies, she gets to see her son again, the son that she gave up. And it's only been a month. I believe Trish mentions to Cyclops in this episode, oh, but hospital records show a month ago you had a baby. So within the span of Maddie leaving and her being in Genosha, it's only been 4 weeks. So, you know, her life is tragically cut short. And it's very heartbreaking because I thought it was beautiful. Now, a lot of people are going to be like, oh, you don't know. We didn't really see Maddie's body. I think there is a shot with a person with long red hair and a blanket over her face, you know, to signify it's a dead body. I believe that is Maddie. I think for all intents and purposes, Maddie is dead since the world faded to white and she cried. I mean, there is a thematic end there. That's not to say that she can't return. That's not to say that when we get Nate Gray in X-Men 97 one day, I hope so, fingers crossed, that he will reconstitute Maddie. That's not to say any of that. But I think Maddie has a beautiful arc here, and it is a quite short story, to be very frank with you, but I think there is, again, that element of tragedy that not only for Genosha, but for these characters on an individual level, right? Maddie finally finds her own path. She gets to see her son again, and then she's murdered. Rogue has two guys that she's sort of been toggling, and when she realizes that her powers, they're not inhibiting her from having a relationship with Gambit because there are things deeper than skin. Gambit dies. Magneto seemingly dies. I don't think Magneto is truly dead just by the nature of how he died. And we've seen some clips later on in the season in some trailers, and it looks like he's there, unless those are just misleading. But I think Magneto somehow is surviving, and it's true to the comics. Same with Emma. I think Emma and Magneto are going to walk away from Genosha fine, because in the comics, Emma develops her diamond skin. It's a pretty big plot point for the character. So I would think killing Emma here would just be a disservice. But Maddie has had a very wonderful fleshed out story. So, you know, Rogue is having a great time with Nightcrawler on Genosha. Tabitha, aka Boom Boom, is there. They're having a good time. They're dancing together. Oh, I love how Tabitha kind of like bumps into Rogue playfully, like, hey, let's dance and have a good time. One thing I would have really liked, and because she is indirectly mentioned here, I would have loved to have seen Mystique mentioned among Nightcrawler and Rogue. And I get it, in the context of a series, they wouldn't really be siblings. They wouldn't really look at each other as siblings, you know, versus in the comics where they do have the sibling rapport. I would have liked to have been like, ah, yes, have you heard from our homicidal mother, assassin mother yet? And, you know, where is Mystique? That is the question I have. I think Mystique is someone in the series. I think she's Val Cooper. That is my theory. My personal theory is that Val Cooper isn't Val Cooper. It's actually Mystique in disguise. But anyways, we see Rogue and Boom Boom enjoying Dazzler's performance. She's back. She's back to die. Maybe she survived. We'll look at who survived once we get to that part of the episode. But they're having a fun time. And then meanwhile, back at the mansion, Trish is interviewing Cyclops. And he's talking about how they've tried to be normal, but they're not normal. In fact, the fact that they're not normal allows normal people to live, that they are different. It's a very powerful speech. And Jean has a moment with Logan where she's, you know, not very sure about her powers. She gives Logan a kiss. They're talking about her relationship with Scott and how that one time after she had gotten the Phoenix in Nevada, she and Scott had sex. That's straight from the Dark Phoenix comic. And she held his powers back with her telekinesis, and they could both see each other eye to eye. Now, this is a really important scene. This is such an important scene in the comics, especially as played for in Endsong, because in Phoenix Endsong, Scott is with Emma. In the comics, Phoenix Endsong, Emma and Scott are together, and Emma wants to see Cyclops' eyes, and she turns into her diamond form and takes off his glasses, and she's immune to his blast. However, when Cyclops tries to kiss her, he's here like, oh, you're so cold, right? Like, you don't even feel human. He says that to Emma. And then at the end of Phoenix Endsong, when Jean ascends into the White Hot Room, she says, Cyclops, I want to see your eyes. Cyclops takes off his visor and looks at Jean straight in the eye. So there's a lot of symbolism with being able to look Cyclops straight in the eye, and that as much of a Emma and Scott fan I am. That's right. I love our God Queen. Jean Grey, our God Queen, is my favorite character. However, I love her as White Phoenix in the cosmos, obeying a cosmic order and bringing universal justice. And I like Scott and Emma together on the mortal coil, engaging in petty drama that is beyond our God Queen. Our God Queen does not need to deal with any of that. But I think one of the things that's incredibly evident about the Scott and Jean relationship is that they can see each other face to face and no one else can. That is what makes them special. And so they talk about Nevada here. We never saw it in the original animated series. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't see where this could have happened. This is a big continuity error, because right after the space shuttle flight, when Jean becomes Phoenix, she goes directly into the hospital. And from the hospital, she goes to Cassidy Keep and she fights Gladiator. And then she takes all of the X-Men up into space, and in space, she takes the Amicron crystal into the burning heart of the sun. And then after she drops the crystal in the sun, I was doing Emma's accent there. She goes, the Phoenix flew with the crystal into the burning heart of the sun. Emma's famous line. So from the sun, Jean lands on Earth, and then she's taken to Muir Island to rehabilitate herself. And they find out the Phoenix won't leave her. From there, she's taken back to the mansion, and the events of Dark Phoenix unfold. Jean is predominantly in the infirmary until she goes out to see Cyclops with Dazzler at the club. And that's when the Inner Circle gets her. And then she becomes full-fledged Dark Phoenix, and the Shi'ar come for her. And it's a trial of Jean Grey, the combat by death, right? Combat by trial, excuse me. Trial by combat. So there was no time. I mean, just strictly speaking, there was no time for Jean and Scott to have gone to Nevada and have a moment. So this is straight up just an Easter egg for the audience there. And that's fine. And I quite enjoy that. So the council scene is, oh, Callisto's there too. So we have Moira, we have Callisto, Sebastian Shaw, Emma being Emma, absolutely fabulous, Banshee, Maddie, and they all want Magneto to be the ruler of Genosha. And this makes sense to me. In the context of this universe, it makes sense that he would be there and that they were going to offer it to him. So we find out that Jean, Scott, and Maddie are in a psychic affair triangle. And and Cyclops is talking to Maddie in the astral plane. I was kind of thrown off by this at first, because I was like, oh, that looks like Maddie. It's so funny. As Jean fans, we can tell the difference between Jean and Maddie. So when we first got into the scene and I saw Cyclops talking to who appeared to be Jean, but I was like, wait, she has the hair down, the earrings, you know, but maybe this is like a convoluted memory. It's actually Maddie, and they've been having a psychic affair, not a psychic affair, but for a month. And I'm glad Jean found this out and was upset. And she was upset because she said, Sinister cut a part of me out and you fell in love with it. And Cyclops is like, well, are you even in love with me, Jean? Or is it just a memory of being in love with me? Like, what is it? These are all wonderful, fair questions that tackle how complicated it is to be in an affair like this, in a situation like this. It truly is. Again, I've always said this. Sinister is an asshole. He's a perpetrator. Cyclops, Maddie, and Jean are his victims. Cyclops was stalked by Mr. Sinister since he was a little boy. Disgusting. Living in an orphanage, being stalked by this creepy geneticist. It's absolutely appalling. Jean had a part of her cut away. Maddie didn't even know she was a clone meant to just breed with Cyclops. He fucked all three of these people. I'm sorry. I get really passionate about it because when I first started X-Men podcasting and I was having conversations, I saw people saying things like, oh, Maddie is better than Jean. And I'm like, who cares which one's the better one? These two women are a victim of this creepy male geneticist. And then I see people being like, oh, Scott Summers is a jerk. I'm like, he's a jerk. He lost his family in a tragedy. He had to go jump out of a plane with his little brother, was put into the foster system, separated from his little brother, and then was stalked in this orphanage by Mr. Sinister, who was obsessed with his mating life, who wanted to just get his seed. It's disgusting. These characters have all been victimized by Sinister. And that's why on the Krakoan Age, I never understood why they put Sinister on the council. Like, that's fine. He's a necessary evil for science, but you don't put this morally despicable, deplorable person on the council. But I'm glad that Bo and the rest of the X-Men 97 team understand how terrible Sinister is and how complicated he left these people. Anyways, so we find out the backstory between Rogue and Magneto, and it was right before, in A Rogue's Tale, we find out that Rogue was called by Xavier, and that's how she joined the X-Men, because Mystique had been manipulating her, and she kind of caught wind of that after she absorbed Ms. Marvel's powers. However, before that moment, in A Rogue's Tale, where Xavier called out to her, she went to the Savage Land with Magneto and tried to understand how to control her powers. And she was very taken with him because he was a person who saw mutant culture, the potential mutant culture, mutant art, mutant fashion, which is great. And you see that in this episode, by the way. And she just was not okay with the relationship as it progressed, because he had a lot of inner demons. I mean, Magneto has a lot of baggage, and it was encapsulated in this moment where he couldn't sleep. He couldn't sleep, and she saw him, and she recognized that he had a lot of demons. Yes, because he survived the Holocaust, because everything going on in his personal life, everything with World War II, everything with the mutants, everything with his brotherhood, everything with the government and Sentinels, it has a profound effect on Magneto. And as a result, he can't sleep at night. What a wonderful little detail. And Rogue just saw that and didn't want to get into a relationship with him. And so as a result, they pretended throughout the course of the series, they pretended this never happened. I'm okay with this retcon. I truly am. I like it very much. You know, we get a nice flashback to Mystique in her human form, right? Which is really nice. And Rogue tells all this to Remy. And Remy's just like, you know, there are some things that are deeper than skin. And, you know, reference to their relationship. So we get to the Genosian Gala. And it's a big celebration because Genosha is an awesome haven for mutants. At long last, they're joining the UN. There's a council. There's a governing council. Magneto's going to be our king. And Rogue and him dance, and it is such an intense, sexy dance. And they kiss, and they're feeling each other up. Now, one of the things that I will say in this situation, though, is Magneto has a unique power, as it is explained here, that he can create an electromagnetic field around him. It cancels out her powers, whatever the reason is. Because of his powers, he's immune to Rogue's touch. And Rogue being touched by him, I understand what they're trying to say, that there are some things deeper than touch. And with a character like Rogue, you know, you want her to keep her powers. You can't just easily resolve it. But there is an importance to touch. I mean, touch and being physical with another human being is very important for a relationship. And, you know, she can't do that with Remy. You know, there's always been the question of, why don't you just put on a mutant collar? They kind of address that in the comic books, that a mutant collar, you know, first of all, is dangerous equipment. And secondly, it gives her like a migraine. And especially after what happened with Storm, I wouldn't touch a mutant collar with that radiation it emanates. But Rogue is 100% not in the wrong with wanting to start a relationship with Magneto. And I know Gambit is very hurt by it, but there is a limitation to where they can go in a relationship. And it's just so well fleshed out here. So Maddie senses that something's coming. And that's when Cable comes in and says, "I'm sorry, Mom." And she goes, "Sorry for what?" And that's it. There's a huge blast. And Sentinels arrive. It's exactly the Sentinel from E is for Extinction. Oh my God. I mean, it's a wild Sentinel and just obliterates Genosha. And Rogue is knocked out and she kind of comes to. And we see Mero and Banshee trying to fly to the gardens. And the Sentinel, the wild Sentinel, just obliterates them. Like, my goodness, they're not effing around here. It was harrowing how they killed Banshee and Mero. I honestly was 100% not okay with it. And so the Sentinel tries to kill Magneto and Rogue, but Nightcrawler comes in, bamfs, is very injured. And then we have a moment where Rogue tries to see if he's alive by taking his pulse, but she just totally, you know, stops herself, and Gambit comes in to feel the pulse, and we find out Nightcrawler's okay. Now, we see that Sebastian Shaw is among the dead. A woman with short red hair and earrings. Is that Rachel Summers? I don't know if that's supposed to be Rachel. Maybe it could be Wolfsbane or something. I don't know. At the gala, we did see Archangel. We saw Moira and Banshee. We saw Sammy the Fish Boys. I cannot believe that he's here. As an adult, Sammy the Fish Man is there, but he is among the dead. Callisto's among the dead. And Callisto isn't just dead. She's like real dead. And it's just, it was a very hard scene to see. Now, I'm trying to see, because I know a lot of Dazzler fans are going to be upset because, you know, this is the Genosian. Oh, wait, it's a woman with the short red hair. Oh, is that Dazzler? Ooh, that's Dazzler, not Rachel. I'm like, is that Rachel? This is the problem. Short red hair. You have to give Dazzler blonde hair. Oh, sorry, it just occurred to me because I was like, oh, yeah. That's Dazzler. Dazzler definitely looks pretty. She looks dead, guys. I'm sorry. Oh, that breaks my heart. Oh. So the Val Cooper's trying to get people to the gardens, but the Wild Sentinel is just obliterating, incinerating mutants like right there on the spot. Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit take to the charges, and they said, "We're not going to bed tonight," thinking that there were more people we could have saved. And they charge into battle. And there's a really heartbreaking scene where Magneto is thrown into the statue of Professor Xavier. And that statue crumbles over and just kills, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, at least 10 mutants the statue falls on. Just looking really quickly, I don't know if I can identify all them. They look kind of like generic mutants. There is one with gray wings. Is that supposed to be Sam Guthrie's brother? I don't know, you know, in the comics, it's Jay Guthrie with the red wings. Here is a person with gray. I don't know if that's supposed to be him. They look like generic mutants. I mean, I'm going to need a second to sort of, you know, marinate on these and stare at them, but I'll let you know if that changes on the Instagram page. There appears to be a redheaded woman with a blanket over it when Magneto's crying, thinking about everyone who's been lost. Is that Maddie? Again, no real confirmation that Maddie's dead, but I think it's a safe bet that Maddie is among the dead here, especially since we don't really see her. But that's okay. You know, it's comics. They're trying to save the Morlocks who are in the bay. And this is unfortunately where Gambit dies, trying to protect the Morlocks, trying to protect his fellow mutants. The Sentinel grabs him. And he says, "The name is Gambit. Remember it," because the Sentinel calls him a mutant target. Oh, and he charges up the entire Wild Sentinel. Gambit stops the Sentinel, the Wild Sentinel, all on his own. That's how powerful he is. Previously, the Wild Sentinel attacked Magneto, and Magneto did his best putting up a shield. This is very true in the comics. We see Magneto as a Wild Sentinel approaches and obliterates Genosha, and Magneto's presumed dead. I'm assuming that's the same plot beat here. But he's hanging on to Leech, and he looks at Leech, and he says, "Don't be afraid," and the explosion happens. So I hope he somehow survives. But yes, that is when Remy is also impaled by the Wild Sentinel, and he dies right there. And he's not just a little dead, Familia. I mean, Rogue is holding him in the way that Lois Lane held Superman during the death of Superman, saying, "I can't feel you." Oh, Familia, that was a rough, rough, rough moment. But among the living are Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler's alive and well. Glob is there. So is Pixie. They survived. But Gambit is there while Rogue is crying. And that's the end of the episode. That is how everything ends for this episode. My God, Familia. It was truly heartbreaking. Truly heartbreaking. Such a powerful episode. So well paced. It's probably my favorite. It's probably my favorite of the series so far. I think the pacing was excellent. I thought the writing was great. I thought the character beats were great. We'll break it down in the days to come on the podcast. It's a tough thing to sort of metabolize. Folks, slide into our DMs. Let us know how you feel at Power of X-Men. We have an interview with Guy Agostini up. We have an interview with Lenore Zan. We have an interview with Lawrence Bane. Guy Agostini, of course, voiced Sunspot. Lenore Zan voices Rogue. And Lawrence Bane voiced Cable in the original, but he voices Executioner. And we have an interview with Lynn Collins, a.k.a. Silver Fox, from Wolverine Origins that we will drop next week. And, you know, we have some other interviews in the works. But, Familia, let us know your thoughts here. Let us know your thoughts.